The Book Nook on WISO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Microsun Lamps.
Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WISO. I'm Vic McCunis. And today we're going to go back 17 years to really the beginning of what became a famous career for a gentleman named Bruce Cameron. He had just published his first book when he visited us. He was coming through Dayton to honor the late Irma Bombeck. And Bruce Cameron has gone on to put out a lot of best-selling books, and a lot of them have been turned into movies. Let's listen now to Bruce Cameron, recorded back in 2002, as he talked about ways that he would take care of his teenage daughter. This was his first book, and it was called Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter on the Best of the Book Nook. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Bruce. How did you get into this humor thing?
Well, you know, And then I like that because it presupposes that I might actually be funny, and this is something that my parents insisted was not true the whole time I was growing up. I always wanted to be a writer. I just, you know, other kids wanted to be astronauts and professional ball players, but I didn't want to do that probably because it was you could make too much money. So instead, I wanted to be a writer, and I have always written. But it was really my funny stuff that got me the most recognition as I was cranking out unpublished and unpublishable novels, suspense novels. Then I would write a letter or something, and people would say, hey, that was really funny, you know, you should do this. And in 1995, I started to circulate a column on the internet. I would write once a month, and I would just write about my life experience, and I called it the Cameron Column. And I started out, I had six subscribers, six people who agreed to receive this thing on a monthly basis, four of whom were related to me or were me. And then, you know, it just kept growing. I've now got 40,000 subscribers. In the course of the list growing, I went to the Rocky Mountain News and showed them some of these columns. This is in Denver. And they were pretty happy to take me on as a weekly columnist, and then Creators Syndicate just signed me up in October, so now I've got a national footing.
Wow. Well, I understand you're in L.A. working on a couple of really amazing projects. Tell us what you're up to.
Yeah, it's pretty fun, and of course, I don't know anything about this. I mean, I'm out here sort of, I'm an arrivist. I'm sort of like the Jethro Bodine type of character. I got out here because I have a deal with ABC to produce a pilot based on the book, Eight Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter.
Really?
And yeah, it's gonna be great. They've approved the pilot, which means we're going to actually shoot the pilot. We need to find somebody to be in it. We're looking for a star to anchor the thing. And I also have a screenwriting deal with Disney to put out a screenplay, and hopefully I can get some more of those, because that looks like it'd be a great thing for me.
And this is also on the book, the same book?
It's also based on the book, yeah, which is a real unusual co-development kind of deal. But they want to do something with the property, so they want to have, you know, the movie and the TV show both moving forward at the same time.
Well, Bruce, on the cover of the book, there's a picture of you and. It's really funny because it's taken from an angle where your head looks gigantic and your feet look really small, and you're pointing at your watch, and you look like you're really, really being stern, and you're really, really being angry. And then on the inside, there's another great photo. Obviously, these are your two daughters sitting
right
behind you, and you have this look like, okay, you know, stay back.
Yeah, not that this does any good. I mean, this is the problem. The subtitle of the book is, you know, Tips from a Beleaguered Father, not that any of them work. The hard thing is my daughters are, they're athletes, and they date athletes. And I'm not a big guy. I'm 5'10", and it's not like I'm huge. And so when the book sort of symbolizes what I'm trying to pull off, the photo to which you refer, because these guys come in, they're taller than I am. So I'm looking up at them, but I'm looking really mean. I'm looking really crazy. I'm seeing if that'll work. And it doesn't.
Well, what I find, I think, really, really amazing about this whole thing is you wouldn't have written this book had you not dated other people's teenage daughters.
Oh, you would point that out. Yeah, that's okay. That's true. That's it is true. It's sort of like though that these girls, they're special. They're my daughters.
Right.
I want some sort of an exemption. There are plenty. That's as a matter of fact. That's the point I make to these boys that come over and they want to date my daughter. There are plenty of other teenage girls out there. Why pick on these?
Yeah. Well, the book is actually over 300 pages long, and it never lags because you come up with so much material from your family life. I love the interjections that your wife makes and that your son makes as well. Your son gets some really good lines, and so does your youngest daughter.
Yeah, I know. My son's 14 years old, but in the book he's 11. And as a matter of fact, that is his review of the book. You say, hey, your dad wrote a book. He'll say, yeah, in it I'm 11, but I'm really 14. And that's all he has ever said about it.
Uh-huh.
He never said if he appreciates it or what. And, yeah, my wife sort of comes off as the Mother Teresa of the family. I mean, she's the one that kind of keeps things under control. She's reasonable. Some would say she's considerably smarter than I am, and they probably are right. So they're in there, too. Yeah, this is all based on – in fact, if I ever ran out of material, all I had to do was, you know, go into the family room and listen to them arguing about what to watch on television, and I had a chapter, you know.
Uh-huh. Bruce, I was laughing throughout the book, and you have a style where you're funny, but you're very serious, and I thought that was interesting how you were able to do that.
Yeah, well, yeah, it sounds interesting to me too. I'm not absolutely sure what you mean. I think
it's like you're saying funny stuff about the fact that, you know, well, like when the guy is coming over to get your daughter. And you take him aside and you say, are you familiar with what an autopsy is?
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty serious.
So is that where you, determine the cause of death? And I say, well, yeah, and you don't want an autopsy now, do you? Right, exactly. It's a fine line, too. You really have to use humor with your teenage daughters. I guess I felt like 20 years from now, we're going to be sitting around the kitchen table, and we're going to be laughing about what we're going through right now, which is pretty stressful. And I thought it might be interesting if I could introduce some of that laughter into our lives today.
Well, we have to earn it, Bruce. When we get clear up to page 232, we finally get to the page where you actually tell us what the rules are for dating your daughter. And we have to work very hard to get to this point. The first rule is, if you pull into my driveway and honk, you'd better be delivering a package because you're sure as heck not picking anything up.
Exactly.
I take it you've had young men honk their horns outside your house?
Yeah, exactly. And that's when so what happens is they get me, you know, because they're not going to get my daughter. She's upstairs putting on her makeup, and that takes longer than painting the Golden Gate Bridge. So while she's doing that, he comes in the driveway, he honks, I come out to talk to him. And that he quickly starts to understand that this is, you know, it may take him a few times, but if he's going to pull in the driveway and honk, I'm going to come out of the house to talk to him, and usually I'm going to ask him if he wouldn't mind moving his car out of my driveway. Matter of fact, all the way back to his driveway would be most convenient for him.
Uh-huh. It's like when you see the car parked outside your house and you know your daughter's in the car, and suddenly you decide at whatever time in the middle of the night you're going to get the ladder out and start banging it around at them.
Well, yeah, there's always the rain gutters, you know, those rain gutters, you don't want to see them clogged with leaves.
Now, how much of this stuff is made up, Bruce? I mean, like the boyfriend with the blue hair, is this artistic license or did this really happen?
You know, I think it's fair to say that everything in here is sort of true, but there's a lot of exaggeration for comic effect.
Uh-huh.
Like, for example, I give you the ways to determine if your daughter has had a party while you were out of town. And one of those ways is if you come home and there are parts of the house that are still cordoned off with police tape, that's an indication your daughter had a party while you were out of town. So.
So that didn't happen yet.
That hasn't actually happened.
Now, I take it your second daughter is still at home?
Yeah. My middle child is a senior in high school, though, so she'll be done with this whole high school thing. And my older daughter's 20 now, but I'm going to tell you that at age 20, she's still a teenage daughter. I mean, I do not say, well, I've got one teenager and one adult. I've got two. I know what a teenage daughter is. I've had one for quite some time. I know how they behave. She may be 20, but she's still a teenager.
So your second daughter will have senioritis this spring, very soon.
Oh, she's already got senioritis. Yeah, this whole, which just drives me crazy. I've already been through this once where, you know, first of all, there's the quest for relevancy. Well, I don't see how this is relevant to my life. She'll shrug as she's thinking about studying for a test on Shakespeare. You know, how is that relevant, she wants to know. And I say, well, it's relevant because you either get studying your homework or you're grounded, and that would be relevant, don't you agree?
Uh-huh.
That kind of conversation, though, you really, once you start getting involved in the crime and punishment of a teenage daughter, it becomes an endless trap because they cannot see any connection between their behavior and the punishment that you have meted out. So if you ground them for having been late for curfew, they don't see that it was their being late for curfew that was the reason why they're grounded. They see it as, you're the meanest man in the world.
Bruce, I know you're mean because I've read your book. And I must say, I think one of the funniest things in the book, hysterical from my viewpoint, was when your daughter gets her first job at a restaurant and she's bussing tables and you decide that you're going to go to the restaurant and kind of spy on her.
Right, because I've never actually seen her do any work before, so it's a unique thing. I want to see what's going on.
And while you're there, she comes in and she wipes off a table, and she doesn't see you. She wipes off a table, and then someone comes and sits down at the table, and the guy starts complaining that the table's wet, and you decide to intercede.
Yeah, I decide that you know, in the interest of helping the restaurant, I decide to walk over to the guy's table and point out to him that the reason why the table is wet is because it's clean, and that maybe if he that he shouldn't read the menu with his hands on the or his arms on the table anyway. And oh, by the way, don't move your lips either. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Well, didn't you call him a moron?
Yeah.
And were you really thrown out of the restaurant, or is this a little artistic?
This is a little artistic. Okay. A little artistic license here, yeah.
There's even a funny little bio for you here on the sheet from the workshop, and it says that you have a screenplay development deal with Disney, a television pilot under development from ABC, and you're supposed to take the trash out to the curb on Wednesday mornings.
In fact, I wrote a column about this one time. With trash day is every Wednesday. I don't think we've ever successfully managed to get the trash out in time to catch the truck. It's always last week's trash that makes it out. You know, it's been one of those the banes of my existence, and so that's where they got that. It's pretty funny. I actually have that column plus a bunch of samples of my work posted to my website, www.wbrucecameron.com. I go by W. Bruce Cameron because there's other Bruce Camerons in the world. So
now,
I go.
The W stands for wacky, right?
No, the W stands for www.wbrucecameron.com. Yes.
Okay. Bruce, your writing reminds me a lot of Irma Bombeck because you're mining the gold in the household like she did.
Oh, thank you. You know, there's no more flattering comment. There's no one to whom I'd rather be compared than Irma Bombeck, and of course, a lot of people feel that way. And she was amazing, and she wrote. Her column came out 3 times a week, and plus she had other writing that she did. She was and they were always an example of finding the funniest part of life in the most minute and obscure places. And so you know, she was a great lady, a fantastic writer, and someone after whom I've modeled my career as a writer. And I would hope that someday someone else might say that. Vic, hardly, you know, that's something that very many writers aspire to, though.
Well, I see your editor at the Rocky Mountain News has compared you to a goofball who's been here in studio with me, Dave Barry. Now, that guy's seriously wacky.
Yeah, and that's nice, too. I mean, Dave Barry, clearly he's the current reigning champ and the master, and he's really funny. I think I would go so far as to say that I don't really I don't think I write the same as Dave Barry, and I think he would agree with that, too. He's really funny. He's in the like current events, and I really am trying to be much more like Irma Bombeck and write about family and write about you know, the day to day little things that happen inside the walls of a typical American household.
Has it been a surprise to you to suddenly see your book as a bestseller, to have a screenplay getting worked on, to have a TV pilot being worked on? Are you going? Don't wake me up.
Yeah, you know, I slayed for so long in complete, not relative, but complete obscurity. I just could not sell a book. I just couldn't make things like that work. And then suddenly with this book, which is the 10th book I've written, but the only one that I'm able to get published, everything came together. And I have a new book deal that I've just completed with my publisher, Workman, that so I'll be coming out with a book around Mother's Day in 2003. And I am eternally grateful and pleased, and I'm flattered by the response of people. Everybody's been so supportive. So I get up every morning thinking, counting my blessings, just counting my blessings.
I must say, I chuckled and laughed and guffawed throughout this book, and you just have these little visual bites, like the one where your daughter, who really would prefer most of the time to take the car to the car wash and cost you some money to do that, when she's got her boyfriend around, suddenly she wants to put on her bathing suit and she wants to go out and wash the car out in the driveway, and they end up spraying each other with water, and you go running out with her raincoat to protect her.
That's right. I don't want her getting a chill. She stopped short of letting me put waders on her, though. She wouldn't let me do that. Yeah, there's my daughter squealing. Now, this is my older daughter. This is the one that was all-state volleyball. She's athletic. She's strong. She's competitive, and she's running around squealing. This was really distressing for me to hear. So, especially because she's dressed in, you know, a T-shirt and a bikini bottom. You know, that's hardly appropriate apparel in which to be washing a car, in my opinion.
Especially with anyone able to observe her and
exactly
embarrass you because you're the father.
I am the father.
Right.
That's the mantra throughout the book. That's how every chapter ends, is you're the father.
Yeah, but at the end, I don't think it's you saying it anymore, is it?
No, that's right. Well, that's the role of the father. It's so interesting. I'm the bad guy whenever I'm trying to hand out rules, but when my daughter goes off to college in the final chapter, and I go with her on what can only be described as a checkbook depletion exercise, all of a sudden I'm the father, and therefore it's my responsibility to, you know, write checks for everything under the sun. You drop your daughter off at college, and it's not just a simple matter of helping her to a room. You have to write checks for, you know, everything, for bicycle parking fees, for dog wash, you know, it just goes on and on and on.
Well, Bruce, I've got to guess that your daughters are pretty amazing and pretty darn tolerant because their dad's writing all this stuff about them. What do they think of all this?
Oh, they are just delighted. Yeah, you know, they're good sports about it, though. I think that they probably are much more sensitive than anybody else to the exaggerations that sort of find their way into this, and so they're pretty good sports that they let me get away with that.
Well, I think a lot of our listeners out there either have been teenagers or have teenagers or know teenagers, and this book, I think, would be humorous to just about anybody out there listening. You have the section where you talk about teenage parties, and you say they come in two flavors, Number one, unauthorized affairs organized by the kids themselves without any adult supervision. The kids behave inappropriately. These parties are strictly prohibited. And number two, organized chaperoned affairs planned and managed by adults and held in safe, supervised environments. These parties are strictly prohibited, too. I like that.
Yeah, that's right.
I've never had any kids, so I've never had an experience with having teenage kids. But I laughed all through the book, and I could see myself. I can remember being that teenage boy, kind of like you do, Bruce.
Yeah.
And being at those parties, some of them unauthorized. And if I was a father of teenage daughters, I'd be worried, too.
Yeah, you know, I hear all the time from women, they say, well, you just say that because you know how teenage boys think. And I say, I know that teenage boys don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you compare them to, a speeding freight train? Or
yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it's a burning freight train is what it is. Who wants something like that in your house?
You also have a lot of concerns about current fashion for young women.
Yes, because the purpose of clothing is to keep the keep the body warm, not to cause heat in the other people, especially other boys.
Uh-huh.
It's to obscure, to cover up. It's not to reveal or provoke. And you will find that teenagers don't understand the purpose of clothing, so they need the father to provide them with a list of prohibited fashions. You know, it can't be too skimpy, can't be too short, can't be too flimsy, can't be too sheer, can't be too clingy. I think that overalls, baggy overalls with a down parka over them is the best gear for just about everything, including prom.
You even dare to step where very few men dare to tread with what you call precarious mental situation.
Ah, yes, the dread, and the initials for that, of course, are PMS.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know, I'm not really allowed to mention this or bring it up in the house, but it exists. And as I point out, it's that for a teenager, it's like the 2 weeks before and the 2 weeks after what my mother always called the curse are precarious mental times.
My guest is Bruce Cameron. His book is 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter and Other Tips from a Beleaguered Father. Not that any of them work, published by Workman. And he joins us by telephone from Los Angeles. I really like the section, A Reasonable Father's Thoughts on Curfew.
Yeah.
That was another very funny section. You say, do's and don'ts for fathers during curfew violation. Don't sleep. Now, I think that one's probably pretty apparent to a lot of parents. But then you say, do call the boy's father.
Right.
Your do's are always pretty amazing.
Yeah, do call, because you're not sleeping, so why should he be sleeping? That's my logic.
Then you say, don't contact the National Dairy Association to see about putting your daughter's face on milk cartons.
That's right. Those people, they have some sort of stupid rule that a couple of hours is too soon to declare someone as being missing.
But you recommend calling the police. Now, isn't this a little extreme, Bruce?
Well, no. The police like to be they like to be called because they've got the toys. They got the pepper spray and the helicopters. I mean, this is the kind of stuff they really like. But what you want to be careful about is, you know, you want to stay focused on the facts, which is that someone out there is holding your daughter against your will, and not allow, you know, for someone else, like maybe your wife, to try to give her cut on it, which is that they're merely just home late from a date.
Clearly, you did some pretty amazing research for this book, including going to a mall and just observing the young people.
Yeah. Actually, I've studied teenagers for years. I've done my best to learn their language and prevent their mating rituals. And it was like Jane Goodall going off to live with the gorillas. I went out to the mall, and of course, you know, if you're over the age of 40, you are completely invisible to teenage girls, except for your own daughter. So you don't really have to put on a disguise or anything. You just sort of sit there, and they won't see you.
Just your daughter.
Just the daughter. And She, if your daughter spots you in a public place, she will turn absolutely stark white. She'll gasp. She'll clutch her chest. You think you're going to lose her, because there's nothing more humiliating to her than to have the possibility exist that her friends might think that she does not live by herself, that they might think that she actually lives with parents and not with, I don't know, Heath Ledger or somebody.
There's so much in this book, and there's so many funny things. One other one that I'd like to mention is the one where you get together with your daughter's boyfriend's parents, and you're thinking all these horrible thoughts about them, but you find out that you have a real connection with his dad.
Yeah, because it turns out his dad has a teenage daughter of his own, and he's afflicted with the same problem I am, which is boyfriend. Because what happens is it'll gradually occur to you over time that of all the boys that have been sniffing around your house, there's one that you just keep feeding all the time, and you recognize all of a sudden that this is the boyfriend, you know, and that you're giving him about $500 worth of groceries every month, which he's eating to no visible effect. These boys have, their metabolism burns at a positively nuclear level.
Uh-huh.
And so you eventually what you have to wind up doing is you wind up feeding the parents too, because I don't know what I think the boy goes home and says, hey, I got this good deal. Why are we spending money here? Let's go over to Bruce Cameron's house and eat their food. So you wind up feeding the parents too. And so I was pretty convinced that what I was going to wind up with is sort of a Cro-Magnon kind of genesis of these people. But in fact, they turned out to be decent people.
Bruce, what's that next book going to be about, the one Workman's going to put out for you?
It's going to be about men. It's going to be specifically about how to change men.
Oh, sorry. okay. What do you have in mind here?
Well, I've been doing some research, and it appears, and this is going to amaze you, but there are some people who feel like men are not perfect the way they are, that they need to be changed, and I call these people, for want of a better term, women. And so I've been talking to women and finding out from them what it is about men that they find particularly vexing, that needs to be changed, And the answer is, well, you'd be amazed at what the answers I'm getting. So that's what's going to happen from the next book. I'm in the research phase right now.
Did this require a significant amount of insurance for you to be out doing this kind of dangerous work?
No, you know, a lot of people, I have a place on my website where people can write me and tell me what they think are the most endearing or irritating habits of men. It's funny how few endearing things have come over the transom.
Oh, lots of pet peeves.
So really,
peeves,
I'm collecting a lot of the information over the web.
Give us that website again.
It's www.wbrucecameron.com.
Now, Cameron, that's a Scottish clan, is it not?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah
I'm very clearly from the landed aristocracy. I haven't claimed my natural birthright.
That's good. Well, we wish you a lot of luck with all these endeavors, Bruce. And when that next book comes out, I'm sure I'll be wanting to read that and hopefully talk to you about it.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, I'd love to do that, Vic.
That was Bruce Cameron, recorded back in 2002. He had just broken out with a book, his first published book, called 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter. He followed that up with 8 Simple Rules for Marrying My Daughter. And he's gone on to really cash in big on books about dogs, including A Dog's Purpose, A Dog's Journey, and A Dog's Way Home. Bruce Cameron, a very funny man. You heard him on the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. Thanks for listening.